How is it that we find ourselves surrounded by such complexity, such elegance?
The genes of you and me,
the genes of you and me,
we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA. We're all made of DNA.
Hi, you're listening to DNA Today, a podcast and radio show where we discover new advances in the world of genetics. From genetic technology like CRISPR to rare diseases to new research, we have you covered. For a decade, DNA Today has brought you the voices of leaders in genetics. I'm Kira Dineen. I'm a certified genetic counselor and your host. Perkin Elmer Genomics is a global leader in genetic testing, focusing on rare diseases, inherited disorders, newborn screening, and hereditary cancer. Testing services support the full continuum of care from preconception and prenatal to neonatal, pediatric, and adult. Testing options include sequencing for targeted genes, multiple genes, the whole exome or genome, and copy number variations. Using a simple saliva or blood sample, Perkin Elmer Genomics answers complex genetic questions that can proactively inform patient care and end the diagnostic odyssey for families. Learn more at PerkinElmerGenomics.com. In this episode, we are going to be exploring not one, but two genetic metabolic disorders. Joining me for this discussion is Brian and Pat. Brian Kelly is 35 years old and is living with propionic acidemia. He's a great inspiration to parents, patients, caregivers alike, finding ways to live a fulfilling life despite the burdens of his disease. Brian uses yoga and meditation techniques for pain relief and is active on social media, so we're going to be plugging all of that during the episode. And he regularly reaches out to the PA community through social media. Dr. Pat Horn is the chief medical officer of HemaShear Therapeutics. His company is developing a potential new treatment for the two rare metabolic diseases that we are talking about in the episode, so propionic acidemia and methylmalonic acidemia. He has practiced for 20 years as a pediatrician and has spent the last two decades working with biotechnology companies developing new treatments for rare diseases. So thank you both so much for coming on the show. I think it's so great to be able to hear from both of your perspectives.
Well, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So, Brian, I would love to kick off our conversation talking about the start for you in terms of how you were originally diagnosed with propionic acidemia, which I think we're going to end up saying PA a lot during the interview for people.
So I was actually originally diagnosed late. I was really sick as a baby. The doctors didn't know why. And my mom kept telling them, oh, he's sick. And the doctor said I was just a sleepy baby. And then I ended up having a metabolic stroke. And I was in a coma for 4 days. And that's kind of how I was diagnosed.
So that must have been very scary for your parents, I imagine, to have a little baby in a coma for 4 days.
Right.
Yeah, certainly. And so, you know, that was when you were first diagnosed as a baby. You know, moving through our timeline a little bit, what was your childhood like with the disease, I think, you know, compared to other kids that you were growing up with?
So my childhood, I was really sick. I was in and out of the hospital a lot. I would say until about the age of around 7, I guess, is when I kind of started getting a little bit better, but I had a lot of seizures when I was younger, a lot of high ammonia flare-ups, which I still have today sometimes. Pretty much spent a good portion of my life, of my childhood in the hospital.
And that's really hard to keep up with school and activities when you're spending so much time in the hospital. It's certainly not the place you want to be as a kid.
Right.
And how did your parents help you manage this? I imagine that they were a big part of being advocates for you and helping you in the hospital, talking with doctors.
Oh, absolutely. My parents were there for me every step of the way. I was never supposed to walk or talk, and they got me physical therapy. They got me speech therapy. to see where I'm at today.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think for so many people with genetic conditions, it's so important to have early intervention in terms of having that help of, like you said, physical therapy, speech therapy. I think that's something that a lot of people with genetic disorders have in common, of having those support systems in place.
Right.
And as you said, you know, you're, you know, functioning well today and enjoying life, which we'll talk about some hobbies that, you know, you're interested in. How has PA affected your health and activities now as an adult? I think, you know, you're 35, right? So a little older than me. Yeah. 36. I am behind. You had a birthday. Happy belated.
Thank you. But as far as how it affected me today, I would say, due to the PA, I have the lack of strength is a big issue for me. So I can't do, I can't lift anything over 30 pounds on a consistent basis. I also have cardiomyopathy, so I get tired really quickly. Also, my fine motor skills are kind of off, so I have a hard time, like, tying shoes, bending needles, things like that.
Some things that you adapt in your life as opposed to someone else that you're friends with that's also, you know, your age. So just doing things maybe a little bit differently than a typical person.
Correct.
So I know you're involved in meditation, which I think is really cool. You know, I don't know, you know, too much about it in terms of using it on a regular basis. I mean, how has this helped you cope with some of these symptoms that you've been talking about?
So I ended up getting Lyme disease in 2012. Oh. And how that affected, with the probably honest, we will never know. But I started getting high ammonia flaps, and I've gone to all kinds of doctors, including infectious disease, my probably honest doctors. And no one can actually tell me the solutions as to why they keep happening, because they come and go. Like, I'd say I get one like once a month, and it lasts about a week. So I use meditation to become mindful and kind of recognize that when I'm not feeling good, I just need to sit down and relax. No, take it easy.
Yeah, I think that's so important. And there's such a bond between our physical health and our mental health. So I think, you know, you're bringing up a very good point with that, of being in tune with yourself and having your body being able to communicate with your mind and your mental health there.
Exactly. Also, you know, the more we focus on pain and disease, the more we create it. So...
yeah, that's a really good quote, I think, of being able to distract yourself is often something, like, even with kids, right? When we have a kid, like, stub their toe or something, like, you know, we're like, okay, like, we're going to kiss it, it's all better. Like, part of it is a little mental, right? When we're like, okay, we're giving you a solution, or you put a band-aid on, a kid is suddenly so much better, right? So I think there is that connection there.
Exactly.
What are some other things that you've learned through also yoga that you're involved in with yoga and your mindfulness journey?
Yeah. So I actually found yoga before I found meditation. I started when I was diagnosed with the Lyme. I was originally kickboxing, and then kickboxing became too much money and too hard for me.
It gets very expensive. I started doing boxing, and I'm like, wow, this is a lot of money. I think the treadmill might be cheaper.
Then I found Yoga with Adrian on YouTube, who is one of the biggest sensations that you'll ever meet. And I just started building her videos and fell in love with it. And then one thing led to another, and now I'm actually taking a yoga class.
Wow, very cool. And you've been sharing a lot of this with the PA community in terms of helping other people with mindfulness. Can you tell me a little bit about that and who you've connected with in the community, just in terms of, you know, if it's caregivers, if it's patients, if it's a little bit of everybody?
Yeah, so I give 11-11 meditations every Saturday. They run about 10 minutes long. It's a great way to kind of let go of whatever's going on in the day so far, and in life in general, just to focus on something else. And, you know, it's great for the PA community, I could say. But, you know, that they're under a lot of stress and stuff. Good, and it's also good for anyone who has mental health or anxiety or anyone in general, really.
I think we all have our own levels of anxiety. I think some more than others. And I think that that's something that's universal in terms of, you know, grounding yourself and using a lot of breathing techniques and some of that with yoga at the same time can be really helpful. Last weekend, I was at a camp for kids and we were doing some of that with the kids. And so it was really great. Even as I was doing it, I was like, wow, I can notice, like, you know, I feel lighter, I feel looser. So it's such a great activity to do, to really, you know, bond with yourself almost. As we kind of are about to turn over to Dr. Horn, do you have any advice for people with PA, caregivers of people with PA, in terms of just having experience of living with the condition?
As far as experience in living with the condition, I would say try not to stress out over it too much and, you know, kind of just focus on what you can control.
I think that's really good advice. And just there's a Maya Angelou quote that I like thinking of is, if you don't like something, change it. If you can't change it, change your attitude. And I think that really speaks to what you're saying. Yeah, I've always loved that quote. And I'm like, that is something to live by. Maya Angelou has a lot of good quotes out there. But anything that you're hopeful about, anything that you have been focusing on, any goals that you've had recently?
Right now, I'm just focusing on my spiritual path, teaching myself astrology and taking a poetry class. So.
Nice. Well, amazing. Well, thank you so much for just sharing so much of your experience. And we were talking a little bit before we started recording that you have this awesome website, bepresentlifestyle.com. So people should definitely check that out. And it's also in the show notes.
Thank you so much.
Did you know PerkinElmer Genomics was one of the first laboratories to offer whole genome sequencing on a clinical basis? Whole genome sequencing can maximize clinical diagnostic yield for patients. With a turnaround time of 4 weeks for the proband sample, PerkinElmer's whole genome sequencing test is designed to provide access to additional valuable information compared to an exome. PerkinElmer also offers prenatal whole genome sequencing as well as ultra-rapid whole genome sequencing for critically ill newborns using dried blood spots. The ultra-rapid genome has a turnaround time of 5 days and includes mito, chromosomal CNV analysis, STR-TNR screening, and biochemical analysis. Also, listen back to episode 176 with Dr. Maduri Hegde, where we explore the power of whole genome sequencing, which also happens to be one of my favorite episodes of DNA Today. And stay tuned for a couple more episodes with PerkinElmer soon. Discover all that PerkinElmer Genomics has to offer at PerkinElmerGenomics.com. So, Pat, I'd love to loop you into our conversation and dive more into, like, the genetics and science side. So as Brian and I have been talking, propionic and methylmalonic acidemia are metabolic disorders. So how do these conditions affect the body? Like, what symptoms do people generally have? And do most people have, like, Brian's experience of being diagnosed as a baby?
You're exactly right. These are both genetic diseases. They both fall under the category of inborn errors of metabolism. And they are conditions in which, you know, when you consume proteins, when you consume fats and the body breaks them down for energy, there's multiple steps in that process. And there are enzymes that mediate each of those. Propionic acidemia and methylmalonic acidemia are different in that they affect different enzymes, but they're all part of the same pathway. And because these enzymes aren't working quite right, there's a buildup of toxic intermediates and toxic metabolites. And these then poison the mitochondria and you can't produce as much energy and they cause metabolic crises. I would say that most patients are diagnosed in infancy now. And it's either the majority of them because they get sick very quickly, because when they start to breastfeed or on formula, they're taking in proteins, the body breaks down these proteins, and they get into a metabolic crisis. And many of them are diagnosed within the first few days of life. Some are not, but every state in the U.S. now has the newborn screens for methylmalonic acidemia and propionic acidemia, so that sometimes the newborn screen comes back positive, and then pediatricians and healthcare reach out to the families, and that starts the process. So I would say in the United States specifically, almost everyone is diagnosed early in infancy.
And is that something that's a recent change in terms of having it on newborn screening for every state? Because it's state dependent, but there's some conditions that it's every state has. But I know like Connecticut's a state that tends to have more conditions than others. And I've always wondered if that's because NORD has an office here, National Organization for Rare Disorders. But is that a recent change, or has that been the case for decades?
So, no, it's a recent change. You know, with the newborn screening, a lot of it, and I can't tell you whether it's been the last decade or the last 15 years, but it's relatively new and to have it. And obviously some states, like you said, have started screening much earlier, and some it's a relatively recent addition.
And because of that, I imagine virtually all babies that are born in the U.S. are then going to be caught with the newborn screening. Do you need a official like diagnosis after that with additional testing to say, okay, yes, because you've had screening to say, okay, this baby has a higher chance for having one of these conditions? And then do you need a test to confirm, or at that point that's all you need is the screening?
Well, so, you know, yes, you do need a confirmatory test is the short answer, because, you know, with any of these there are false positives. In this case, we'd be more interested in a false positive. So sometimes, depending on how sick the child is, you know, oftentimes these babies are sick by the time the newborn screen comes back. But then there are the ones that are doing better, then you can repeat the newborn screen. I think in the U.S. today, almost everyone has a genetic test to confirm the diagnosis and confirm the genetic variant that it is. That's not so much in the rest of the world, but I would say in the U.S., almost everyone is going to have a genetic test. There are other ways to diagnose it, you know, by doing the metabolite levels, looking at the metabolite levels in the blood and the urine, and then maybe even doing some enzyme assays. But for now, it's mostly genetic analysis.
And when we are looking at some of the information about these conditions, PA and MMA, what is the prognosis and lifespan for someone that is diagnosed? I imagine that's also changed over the years.
Well, so for like a lot of genetic conditions, there's a big variability in how severe it is. And that's because there are a number of different variants, and they all impact the enzymes differently. You know, so those variants that lead to like a complete absence of enzyme function are, you know, reduce it by 90%, have a much more severe disease than those that reduce it by 20% or 30%. And so individually, it can be very different. In terms of prognosis, many of these children will be very sick early on, and then they tend to outgrow their hospitalizations as so much. Some do, some don't. But then there are a lot of kind of long-term complications from even the lower levels of the metabolites. In terms of how patients do, you know, there are patients like Brian who live independently, have a very good life in that, and some are more severely affected and won't be independent and develop then very progressed renal disease and cardiac disease. You know, the reality is it probably hasn't changed much in the last few decades. There's no specific therapies yet, and there's none of that. And recognizing that need is kind of what HemaShare has really tried to do.
Yeah, certainly, because you have a drug that you're currently, an investigational therapy, I should say, that's in development. What's the goal of this therapy? I mean, you're saying that there's not great treatment options right now, so you're looking to change that.
Right. So yes. So our compound that we're looking at is one called HST-5040. And as you said, it's an investigational product that's not approved in any country, in any place, so it really is just an investigational product that, you know, it's restricted to clinical trials right now. But in the lab, you know, in cultured hepatocytes, from patients who had had methylmalonic acidemia and propionic acidemia and had undergone liver transplant. And we've taken those and can grow those cells under special conditions that mimic the disease. HST5040 decreases the levels of these, what are called the toxic metabolites. So the metabolites that build up as a result of the enzyme blockade, HST5040 in these cell systems reduces those to very low or near normal levels.
So it neutralizes the toxic substance that's building up that's causing the symptoms.
Yes. So it gets rid of those toxins. And the hope is we will see the same thing as we move into a clinic population and into patients. So that's what the clinical study is designed to do. This is the first time this drug has been given to patients with propionic acidemia and methylmalonic acidemia. So we're looking to see, does it actually work? Does it do the same thing in people that it does in the lab? And is it safe? What is the safety profile of this drug? And that's the aim of the study that's called the HERO study.
And so how does this differ from treatments that are currently available, like what the standard of care would be for someone that has PA or MMA? I mean, how much do those treatments truly alleviate symptoms? Because it sounds like the investigational therapy that you have, like, we could really be on to something in terms of eliminating a lot of the symptoms if those toxic levels are brought down. So what is that compared to what's on the market today?
Well, so really the standard of care right now is primarily diet therapy. So the patients are put on diets that really restrict certain proteins. So proteins are built up of amino acids. When your body breaks the proteins down for energy, it breaks them down. And there's a group called the branch chain amino acids then that go into this pathway that's affected by methylmalonic acidemia and propionic acidemia. So the goal of diet therapy is to reduce the exposure to those specifically branched chain amino acids and supplement them with amino acids and with different food sources, a lot of carbohydrates that the body can metabolize without the buildup of these products. There really is no specific drug therapy for this. Patients are supplemented with vitamin B, and in some patients that helps the different enzymes, depending on the different variant of the genetic mutation. But vitamin supplementation, carnitine supplementation to help kind of control all that, those are the primary ones. More and more now, patients are undergoing liver transplantation to as a treatment for these. And what liver transplant does is it does reduce the fluctuations in these metabolites, especially the very, very high fluctuations, the ones that are called metabolic decompensations and lead to hospitalizations. But patients can have ongoing problems as a complication of not being able to fully normalize the levels. So this, there really are no specific drug therapies targeted for these diseases and these conditions yet.
So it's a lot of diet control so that you're trying to eliminate eating the substances that the body has a hard time breaking down properly, if I'm getting
yes,
that right.
That's okay, exactly yes. Right. And,
yeah.
Taking me back to
the metabolic class I took in grad school and everything. And it's like, that was definitely one of the harder classes, I'll say. So,
yes.
You have a tough job.
and continue to provide these patients with all of the energy they need to grow and develop as normally as possible. And so that's where it balances. And again, then even if their diet is well controlled and that's working, when people get sick or they have a fever or even just a cold, then there's a big energy requirement and your body actually starts to break down its own protein. So what happens when these children and these patients start to get sick is they take on a lot more energy in terms of carbohydrates and stuff. So to provide energy for your body without breaking down the proteins. Some patients can manage very well with that. Some patients, even with all the diet restrictions, the ones that are on the more severe end, continue to have problems.
Yeah, so certainly a wide range like we see with many genetic disorders.
Yes.
And it is interesting. I feel like as we you know, advance more with our technology and understanding of genetics, it's going to become more and more important to know what variant someone has that is genetically causing this disorder, because that's where personalized medicine is going to come into play, of just even knowing, you know, maybe for someone with one of these disorders, the treatment won't change necessarily, but that the prognosis might change, of knowing like, okay, you've got mutation A versus B. A has, you know, the enzyme barely works, whereas B, it works fairly well, but not as good as someone that doesn't have the disorder, and just knowing like that one of them is going to be more affected than the other. I mean, maybe this is already very much into play and I'm just not aware, but it seems like it's becoming more important to know variants.
And that's becoming incredibly important in a lot of genetic conditions. Not a lot of literature out there yet in methylmalonic acidemia and propionic acidemia to look at that. There's starting to be some, but not a lot.
And is that at all part of the HERO study of looking at what variants people have, or is that maybe a future study?
Well, so as part of the HERO study, you know, we are collecting the variants and trying to look at that. But that's going to be a longer term thing. You know, the HERO study is a relatively small study. You know, we're looking to recruit 12 patients. Those kind of analysis really take much larger cohorts. So more like a natural history type study, or as people continue to develop potential new therapies in these diseases and collect that across the different, you know, different therapeutic modalities to try to bring that in and get enough data to really draw some meaningful conclusions.
Yeah, certainly. I think cystic fibrosis is a great example of that, of like we know a lot of the different variants and what that can mean in terms of the symptoms a person may have and what medications they're going to be taking. So I think that's kind of one that has been like a poster child in terms of like, okay, what could we be looking at for other genetic conditions down the road? So if people are listening and either they know someone that has PA or MMA, or they have it themselves, they have patients with these conditions, what is the inclusion criteria, or what is needed for someone to be eligible to enroll in the HERO study and possibly be one of these 12 people?
Okay, so you need to have, you know, to get started, you need to have at least a clinical diagnosis of either methylmalonic acidemia or propionic acidemia. As part of the study screening process, if you have not yet had a genetic analysis, we'll do the genetic analysis to make sure that's in fact what you have. I think that's it. And patients and need to have a history of having at least one hospitalization for what's called a metabolic decompensation. And right now we're enrolling patients 2 years and above. So any age above 2 years, they're eligible as long as they have the diagnosis, and then also to have some high metabolite levels, methylmalonic acid and MCA levels.
Okay, so let's see if I've got it. So they have to have a clinical diagnosis, which if they don't have a genetic one, you could confirm that. They need to have been hospitalized with a crisis of some kind related to it. And be above the age of 2. Did I miss one? Was there a fourth?
Well, and they need to have elevated metabolite levels.
Elevated metabolic levels, metabolite levels. Okay. All right. So I think we've got that. Well, I mean, thank you so much for sharing so much information with this. People can head over to hemoshear.com. That's hemoshear.com. And what we were talking about with Brian earlier, you can head over to bepresentlifestyle.com. We're going to have all the links in the show notes for you. So really, you can remember dnapodcast.com. Just head over there. But thank you so much both for coming on and sharing your expertise and your experiences. I think it's just so valuable for people to hear from both of you. I think it's just great when we can have a patient advocate on and someone that's working in the field. So thank you so much, Brian and Pat. I just appreciate it so much.
Well, you're welcome. And again, thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you so much.
And for DNA Today listeners, tune in next week. We're going to be talking with Phenotips actually for the next 2 weeks. So we've got great 2 episodes coming up to celebrate Pride Month. So you're not going to want to miss those. For more information about today's episode, visit dnapodcast.com, where you can also stream all episodes of the show. We encourage your questions, comments, guest pitches, and ideas. Send them all into info@dnapodcast.com. Search DNA Today on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, so you can connect with us there. And a favor, please rate and review the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. This truly helps us climb the charts and allow more genetic nerds like yourself to find the show. DNA Today is hosted and produced by myself, Kira Dineen. Our social media lead is Corinne Merlino. Our video lead is Amanda Andrioli. Thanks for listening, and join us next time to discover new advances in the world of genetics.
The genes of you and me, the genes of you and me, we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA.